We are a weekly podcast, Soul of a Gamer.
Hey, I'm smart this time. Well, I did not, this
let's
time.
Let's not go that far, okay?
I will fuck it up again.
I love pressing that button. That was my favorite button.
That's definitely it.
This game gets really fucking weird.
So you do acid and then you go into the hamster shit.
And this week is...
Night Trap.
Night Trap.
They're right behind you, Night Trap.
10-year-old birthday party. Next scene, kill the kid.
You got to kill the kid. Sha-la-la-la-la-la, car is coming. Throw your body into the car and die. All I could do every time I was playing Ethan was just... would start walking around and go, Jason!
Oh, God. It's
just one. And we have liftoff.
Welcome back, everybody. This is a real episode of Soul of the Gamer this week.
We're real this time, not fake like last time.
Yep. We do hope you guys enjoyed the, you know, top five horrors. We had a lot of fun actually doing that. That was a cool little thing. We might do a couple of those in the future, just top five of something. And yeah, we hope you enjoyed it.
But for sure, and tell us your opinions.
Yeah, seriously, we're back at this week with Until Dawn, which we announced last week and the previous week. So we'll get right into that after we start talking about the games we're playing. So what are you playing, Steven?
And we did not... Oh, yes.
No. What did you? What were you going to say? What the fuck were you going to say?
I was just going to let people know we did not play the remake of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Just so you know.
Yeah.
But we wanted to jump on the hype.
I'm sorry. I jumped at you like that. I was about to punch you in the face, actually.
My bad.
In the computer screen, I was about to punch you.
I mean, that's fair.
Dude,
I probably deserved it.
You know this, but I'll tell the audience this. I have a buddy who back in the day we played games together, and he would go, I'm about to punch this game in the face. It was always the funniest thing he ever could see. You know what I mean? Like, what a stupid fucking thing to say. But it was always, like, on the outside, you're just watching, like, what the fuck did you just say?
It's a lot better than one of our other friends saying, I'll spank you until I make you fall in love with me.
Oh, yeah. We've got some good friends out there, guys, who say some real fucking shitty shit.
But yes, games I'm playing this week. I actually have gotten super hooked on a game that came out recently. Mm-hmm. Trading Card Game Card Shop Simulator.
Dude, I saw that actually. Is it on VR you're playing it, or are you playing it on computer?
I'm playing it on Steam.
Play it on VR. I've heard the VR version's fucking amazing.
I bet it is, dude. I'm so hooked to this stupid game. It is so addicting.
Yeah.
And I'm like... It's so good.
I hate
how good these simulator games are.
You know what it is? It's in this case, it's what I want to do, right?
Yes.
I think any one of us would gladly own a card shop, or we could buy cards and sell cards. And the only difference is
tournaments.
Yeah. The only difference is I would probably try to do it as reasonable as possible instead of trying to be a fucking dickhole and being like, hey guys, this card costs $16,000. None of you are going to buy it, but I'm going to put it here.
So I've got a system for the game. Makes it super simple for myself, but super awesome for the customers.
Mm-hmm.
I base off the market value, and I round up or down based on how close it is to the nearest dollar.
Yeah.
So if a card pack normally costs $4.47, I make it cost $4.
Yeah. You know, I would love that if they made an online version of that where somebody owned the card shop and you could just go buy cards with fake money.
Seriously.
Dude, and then like the value is only in the value of the game. You get your collector thing without having to spend a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
Like I think that's the problem with most card games for all of us is we want to play them all, but in doing that we have to spend a ton of money doing it.
Yeah. Especially games like Magic. Yeah. I mean, Yu-Gi-Oh! Can be pretty expensive too, and Pokemon can be too.
Pokemon's always fucking expensive. Dude, I just saw packs that came out 4 years ago. 4 fucking years ago were going for $100 on eBay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why?
Crazy.
What is so intense about these packs now that back in the day, it took 20 years for you to go up to that fucking price, and now it's fucking
it's
4 years later?
It's all about the power level of those packs, man. Sometimes they
not even that, dude.
Set.
It's just people are so fucking selfish, I feel like.
I mean, that's a case in it, too, but I mean, that's also just a thing. Like, the power levels of some of these cards make it so even a chance of getting that card makes the entire set worth more money.
Yeah, which is stupid. And it's not even the power level. I would say it's the fucking worth of the card, right?
Yeah. Like the, well, I mean, if it's a card that's gonna pretty much be like, that's the big problem with Magic right now, is there's a bunch of cards that like every single deck has this card in.
Yeah, and if you don't have that card, you're not doing well.
Yeah. So the value of that card either goes tremendously up or tremendously down based on that.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, that's a cool game. I'm going to give that a try, actually. I'm going to buy it on MetaQuest 2, I think, and just play it like that.
There you go.
Because I really want to. It sounds like a sweet fucking game. I can't recommend it enough, and I haven't even fucking played it yet.
And the stupid thing is like, I never really thought about, like, when owning a card shop, like, where they get, like, all their individual cards, whether that's just people that come in and sell their cards. But yeah. I was like, oh, you could just sit in, you can buy packs, and then instead of putting them on the shelf, you can open them and then sell individual cards on your own
shelf.
But
you take a risk doing that. You could, you know, the pack cost you $4 to buy, and the whole pack consisted of, I don't know, $5 of cards you get.
Oh, yeah, there's sometimes you open up and it's like 95 cents of value of all the cards in the pack. Yeah. And then other times it's like $110.
Yeah, value, it's a big risk. Like, but also when you do that, people would be pissed because they don't want to buy individual cards a lot of the time. People want to buy fucking packs. So they get the feeling of excitement in the game. I'm sure it's different, but I think in real life, the adrenaline you get from opening a pack and fucking getting the card and then buying
the card
are very different.
I will say, especially in the realm of Magic, like, I would always rather pull every card of my dreams. But if I have a deck in mind or a card that I need to have for my deck, I'm going to go buy that card individually.
It just depends on what you're doing. I feel like collectors will probably like to open packs because they're not playing with the cards. But players would probably like to buy the cards so they don't have to risk spending so much money on the packs.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, this card is worth $40, but how many packs do I have to buy to get a chance to get that? Like, exactly. I could be spending $200 in packs and not get it still.
Yeah, because I've been into One Piece for the last couple years, and the One Piece cards I've pulled way outweigh the amount of money I've spent on the packs. Like, it is insane how much money I could sell all my cards for. But at the same time, I'm not doing it because I want my money back. I'm doing it because I'm having fun.
Well, and I got super back into Magic again, especially with all the new horror stuff that came out recently.
All
like, they just did a Chucky series of cards.
Oh, that's cool.
I had to pay $40 for 7 cards, but it's worth it.
All right, well, I am playing... What the hell am I playing?
I don't know.
Shoot, Two
what
Worlds 2, I
playing?
Think. I think I'm still playing Two Worlds
still
2.
Still playing that? All right.
Yeah, because it's way longer. I remember playing this back in the day, and I know I put it down because I got frustrated. So there are two events that made me get really frustrated where I put it down for a long time. The first one is there was a glitch in the game where you have to go through this door, but the door was locked. And there's no way to get through locked doors if they're, like, story locked. And it was just a common glitch where hopefully you had a save that was recent. So you could just revert back. And my last save was, like, 10 hours before because I had turned autosave off. And I'm like, okay, fuck this game. I'm not never playing this fucking game again because 10 hours is a long fucking time.
That's a lot, yeah.
And
especially because you're like, oh, shit, what all did I even do?
Yep.
Can I get back to where I was?
Yep. And I ended up doing it again and just beating the boss again and then everything a few months later. And then I get to a point where I'm on the new island, like the last island you have to get on, which is the biggest one of all of them. And I die the minute I step off the teleporter. And I hadn't saved again for 10 fucking hours. I was so mad. I don't know why I turned off autosave. Like,
yeah, that sucks.
I'm sure it's had something to do with performance because the performance of the game for Xbox 360 was really fucking bad back in the day.
That's fair.
On Steam, it's awesome. They have an HD version. It's so much fucking fun to play. And the autosave is like every 15 seconds. So it's much, much better.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. But so far, I haven't run into any glitches. So I've been having fun just like exploring more and actually trying. I don't feel like I'm heavily underleveled like I did when I first played it. Because before, I would have like be really careful when fighting monsters. And now I feel like I can just fucking take on anything.
Nice. That's the way to play those games.
Yeah, guys, I can't recommend Two Worlds enough. It's got one of the worst stories. I've said this before. It's got some of the weirdest glitches, but it's one of the coolest RPG systems I think I've ever fucking played in my life. Because that RPG system is perfect. They almost perfected RPG. If they were Baldur's Gate, they would have had that down in a fucking basket. It was so perfect.
Nice.
Yeah. Like, Baldur's Gate, when you think of that with all the crafting and shit, I'm like, that's Two Worlds 2. This is all the stuff they already did back in 2006.
Fair.
Oh.
Fair.
All right. Baldur's Gate. Well, let's jump right into the story now.
Yes, give it to us.
We'll start, you know, as usual, with the little story of the back, not the background of the game, but the story of the game. So, yes. Until Dawn follows the story of 8 teenagers who have come to a cabin mansion in the woods owned by the parents of one of the teenagers. The year prior, 2 sisters who were friends of the group disappeared in the mountain during a winter storm due to a prank gone wrong. Now the teens must deal with a killer who wants them all gone and monsters who want them all for food. Dun, dun, dun.
I know what you did last summer.
Yep.
Or winter. Wait. Or whatever it was.
Maybe last night. All right. The beginning of Until Dawn actually starts in 2008. The game was first being developed by Sony London as a game for the PlayStation Move, which, guys, if you don't, and I explain it here, but I'll explain it better here in a second, a handheld similar to the Wii Remote or the Xbox Kinect. It was the dumbest looking fucking thing I've ever seen. It looked like a fucking microphone you held in your fucking hands.
It was like it kind of looked like some vibrators with that giant ball.
Yeah, it did. But it looks like a microphone, too, if you were to hold a microphone on stage or something. Like,
true.
It was just such a weird fucking thing, and I don't know why they made it or why they still make, because they still make it. Did you know that?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I remember anyone enjoying in that was the Michael Jackson experience with it.
Okay, well, that's good. A game got it.
That was the only thing I remember here.
But, like, we had already mastered that pretty much. You know, Nintendo had been doing it for a little bit at that point. And Xbox started with the Kinect, but even the Kinect died pretty fast, and they gave up on that because it was so fucking dumb because people don't care about that.
Yeah, pretty much.
The game was also meant to be released for the PlayStation 3, which, you know, it ended up being released for the PlayStation 4. Sony London worked on the game until 2010 when Supermassive Games took over as the developers of the game. When Supermassive took over, they wanted to create a game very different from the previous games. Will Biles, the creative director for the game, wanted to make a playable horror movie and quickly got to work on making the game as gimmicky to horror movies as he could. Which I think is, this is the second fucking time we've had this, right? Where people want to make it like, we want this game to be a playable fucking movie.
I mean, we kind of had that with Night Trap and with Double Switch when we originally played both
of
those.
Yeah, and this. Remember, we had that with Typing of the Dead.
Yeah,
they said the same
true.
Thing. And I believe we had that with Sedua's Sacrifice as well. People are just really trying to make it like an interactive experience when you're playing games now, which is crazy. And, you know, it goes back probably to the 90s, but it's gotten like more and more crazy as we go ahead in time.
And how many times when you're watching movies do you sit there and shout at the screen or want characters to do something different? And how many of those people are like, man, I wish I could have control in these situations?
You'll
and
see
he actually, game creators are like,
he actually talks about that in here, which is really funny. Gimmicky horror movies, blah blah blah. Some of the movies that Biles has admitted to being an inspiration to the theme and feel of the game are 1960's Psycho, 1963's The Haunting, 1973's The Exorcist, 1978's Halloween, 1982's Poltergeist, 1987's Evil Dead, and 2013's The Conjuring. Biles says on making the game more of a horror trope, it was so players could say, okay, I get it. You're doing a teen horror. But the second reason, and this, for me, was much more Machiavellian, was to make them all slightly unpleasant and flawed, because I genuinely believe it's a much better way to get people to empathize. We're all flawed, and it helps if you can see something of yourself or of somebody you know in a character. And of course, it gives you the power to redeem them, or to damn them if you prefer. Which I really like that explanation of it. That's fucking awesome.
I mean, and it's totally true.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times if it's too perfect, it takes you out of it.
Yeah, right.
Like they have to be flawed because people are flawed inherently. Yeah.
And I mean, it's cool to even think about, because I'm sure you've played games like this and everyone's had to. It's where you hate the fucking main character and you hope the worst thing happens to them.
Like,
And you get that chance in this game. So that's fucking awesome.
Oh, fuck you, Emily.
The game was very hush-hush until a trademark was discovered with the name Until Dawn, and the description of computer software was found to be purchased by Sony sometime in 2012. People then speculated that a game was in the works. Later that year, a closed demo was featured, and people were very excited at what they saw. This demo did feature the game in a first-person perspective, where the players more controlled things in their hand, such as a flashlight or gun. The game would also feature a two-player co-op mode.
Interesting.
Yeah, right. This is all Sony London's original, and then when Supermassive took over, this is kind of the direction. But I think they did this because of the PlayStation Move.
That's fair.
Because you can't do a third-person perspective in a PlayStation Move game, I feel like.
Yeah.
That would be weird. People really loved the demo, but were upset that they would have to buy a PlayStation Move, which I would be too, in order to enjoy the game. Even though the game was basically done. It was done, okay? Oh, in 2012, it was done and was ready to be released in the coming months. Biles had a meeting with Sony asking for the game to be moved from PlayStation 3 to the PlayStation 4, as well as removing the need for a PlayStation Move. Sony was excited about this and allowed the game to move, which is...
Oh, perfect.
Isn't that crazy? They were going to release in a few months, and they said, no, let's start over.
I mean, I'm glad someone came out and asked to change instead of it just coming out on the Move, because this is one of those games that would have gone under the radar if it was stayed on the Move.
I think so, too, because the Move was just not popular. I don't know anyone who had a fucking Move. Did you have a Move?
No.
Yeah, because it was fucking
and
dumb.
I have a lot of gimmicky shit
from
a lot of companies, but I did not get the Move.
I got both Kinects
when they came out.
Yeah, of course, because that was fun, but fucking the PlayStation Move just looks so dumb. Like,
it did.
Oh, God. I feel bad for them because they clearly fucked up and they just wanted to keep trying to make it good.
It's the same thing with the PSVR. Like, if I'm going to get a VR, I'm just going to get a better VR.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get one that's tied to the PlayStation.
Yeah, and you're going to get one that can go on Steam or that you can play in your living room. Yeah. Yeah. This led to rumors that the game was canceled because it was meant to come out in 2013. When the release time came and went, people were wondering where the game was. One of the first things that Supermassive did upon taking over from Sony London was rehash the entire script. They felt like the story was good, but the game was too English for an American audience. Or sorry, American story. For this, they hired two people, Graham Resnick and Larry Fessenden. These two were very famous for many horror movies they helped create in Hollywood. One of them, and I didn't put it in here, one of them created a movie. I want you to guess the name of the movie.
Do I get any hints about this?
It has something. It is very involved in the game.
It's very involved in the game. Ouija.
Nope. Ouija. I guess the Ouija board's in the game, isn't it? No. Yeah. It's called Wendigo.
Oh. Fucking assholes.
Fuck that guy. I don't know if Wendigo was the last movie he worked on or Wendigo, whatever. However you fucking people want to say it.
It's Wendigo.
I like Wendigo better.
No.
I love it, but clearly that guy had that on his
Wendy,
brain still.
Go! Wendy, get the fuck out of
get the fuck out of my house, Wendy. But, you know, clearly that guy had a lot of inspiration from that fucking movie to ruin the game with fucking Wendigos.
I don't think it ruins it.
I will get into that with the best and the worst, but it's my feelings are very, very divided on it.
Yes.
These two were very famous for many horror movies they helped create in Hollywood. They started on the script pretty quickly. One thing that Supermassive wanted for this game was for any decision and death to be permanent for a single playthrough. Which, guys,
perfect.
That's fucking crazy.
Yes.
They made a pretty harsh autosave for the game and instructed the writers to write multiple ways for something to happen. This led to a script that was 10,000 pages long.
Jesus.
The normal length of a script for a game tends to be between 5,000 and 10,000 words.
Words, not pages?
Words.
Damn.
With normal pages containing 250 to 500 words per page.
Damn.
Yeah, so if you think at the low end to the high end, so 5,000 words to 500 words per page, that's 10 pages.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
so,
a lot.
Yeah. 20 pages with the high end, and the low end is like 40, 50 pages, like well over what they should have had. But this is what they wanted.
Fair.
In a later interview, Resnick and Fessenden said that when they messaged Sony about the length of the script, Sony thought they were kidding and released a statement claiming the script was 1,000 pages long.
Oh.
Yeah. With the script,
that's a joke. It's fine.
Yeah, with the script being so long, it made it hard to change. They could do edits for pacing and lighting, but not much after that. Biles says on this, even one conversation change can really bugger things up later on. And these guys are English, by the way, so you going to hear some terminology that's more English. And sometimes you might not find it until much, much later. We had a Reddit AMA, and there's one bit that we missed where Mike and Sam go to the place where the bodies are, and if there's only one body, they still use the plural. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So
I didn't follow it fully.
So basically, there's a part in there where they find bodies, or they can find one body or multiple bodies, but no matter what they find, they say bodies.
Oh, okay.
But because they fucked up and they changed something in the script, and they shouldn't have changed it.
That's fair.
So with 10,000 pages, I can't imagine how hard it is to change something in the fucking script.
I mean, continuity of trying to keep all that shit together with, if you go down this path, this is said. If you go down this path, this is said.
Yeah.
But you can't say this because this path doesn't know that, because only
that
version
of it has the meta. Well, think of this. If you change something on page 252, that comes back on page 4,896... You know what I mean? Like, if you change that one thing, well, suddenly and on page 4,000, you forgot that was there because holy shit, there's 10,000 fucking pages.
And then you get people like CinemaSins who sit there and be like, hey, what the fuck? Yeah. What's wrong with you guys? I love them. So
sorry, to finish off this quote, it was a tiny little change. Yeah. And while it wasn't a dreadful oversight, people noticed. Because, like you said, there's going to be people who fucking find it.
There's nitpickers, always.
The permanent death was supposed to make a player of the game feel like they were watching a horror movie. Normally, a person might say, I would never do that. I would do this instead. This forces the player to make the decisions that could result in the death of any one of the 8 playable characters. A major challenge for coding the game was the darkness in the game. Supermassive had a lot of trouble making the darkness an okay amount without the players feeling like they were not able to see at all. It took a lot of shadow work, but eventually the team was able to find a nice balance in making the game as dark as it could be without going too far. Bile says on this, we basically started again. Working with Guerrilla Killzone's engine often offered obvious advantages, but finding an appropriate lighting solution, or rather an appropriate darkness solution, proved trickier. The dark is a really important thing in horror, obviously, because you don't know what's in there. And with games, it's really hard to do dark, which sounds mad, but it really is. Because traditionally, if you have a bake where all the lights for an entire scene are effectively baked into the texture, and then the lights for darker areas are taken away because it's just too computationally expensive, the game wouldn't run. So, like, it is insane that they had to do so much to get that darkness just right, because like he said, computationally it's really hard to make something perfect, and then on top of that make the game run with those things put in.
Well, and then still having to like handle like all the different monitors, it's going to be on a different TVs stuff. You have to make sure it's not dark on most CVs or too dark on most TVs.
Yeah, for sure. The butterfly effect in the game plays a very important role, showing that many things the players choose can result in big changes later in the game. This is what led to the 10,000 pages that the team needed in order for the game to work the way Supermassive wanted it to. With the butterfly effect and the harsh autosave, Supermassive claims that no 2 plays the player may do will be the same. A big change the team decided to make after making the switch from PlayStation 3 to PlayStation 4 was to switch the camera from first-person perspective to third-person perspective. This, however, is not entirely true for the game. Most of the game is played in second-person perspective, or fixed camera perspective.
Yeah.
They wanted it to seem more like a horror game and felt like showing the reactions of the characters to the players would play well to how they wanted the game to be perceived. There was a lot of pushback on the fixed camera thing. The team really did not like it too much, and Boyles had to have a meeting with them and convince them that it was the right way to go for the game. Testers also ended up very frustrated with the constant switching of the camera angles. This led the team to try and perfect the way the cameras would switch and the timing of each one. That way you wouldn't have 12 switches per area.
Yeah.
Yeah, which apparently originally they did.
Yeah, which they do have like 2 or 3 now,
which
per area.
Which is really fucking frustrating,
It's frustrating, but it's not as bad,
When making the move from PlayStation 3 to the PlayStation 4 as well, they really were excited for the extra computational power they would have. This allowed for so much more features on the characters' faces to be captured. And we talked about this in the Drake's Fortune, you know, Uncharted, where they were able to layer perspectives on top of the character's face. So instead of a polygon where you have a face that have no blemishes or anything, you can see a scar, or you can see like 5 o'clock shadow, or like it was really cool. And then you go up another generation and holy shit, it gets so much cooler.
Well, this is the generation that were like Last of Us and really started getting motion cap to be really successful.
For sure. You were able to use shaders and layers to make some pretty remarkable things for the PlayStation 3. However, for the PlayStation 4, they were able to use motion capture to not only capture the movements of people, but also the facial expressions they would use when they are scared or worried. They were able to capture so much more and really enjoyed the up in play that this led to. Boyle says on this, "Now, when we scan the actors, we don't just scan their face, which of course we did anyway to get the model, but every single facial expression. Then a model is made with each one of these expressions, and the performance that they then give with all the little dots effectively pushes the model to the expressions they've already provided. So you get a really accurate representation." Like, which is amazing. Like, again, like...
just doing different faces.
Yeah, I mean, like, and you think about that, you're like, okay, well, here's a face, right? And they're smiling, and that's it. But you don't know the dimples and the smiles, the how their facial hair might smile, how their nose acts when they smile, how their eyebrows go, you know?
Yeah.
Like, each one of those movements now doesn't have to be programmed. It can be captured and then later programmed to fit the narrative in which they're giving, which is cool. I like that a lot.
I'm sure they can do like different things where it's like you just type in anger and it goes to where all the anger features are like located. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about it, we talked about this with Senua's Sacrifice. We talked about this with Baldur's Gate, how like important it is to capture every single tiny detail on someone's face. Because, you know, with Drake's
Fortune.
Because
a lot of us had a crush on Hayden Panettiere. Yeah. And we needed to see her face in perfect clarity.
For sure. And not only that, it's like. When you're thinking, you pay attention a lot to the eyes, but you also look at everything on a face. Like, you really do focus in on little things that people do, and you're like, I think it's cute when you do that. And, you know, that could be a very attractive thing to people.
Oh, yeah. So, I love when your nose wiggles when you do this. Yeah. I love that you have this little dimple when you get a really big belly laugh. I love that. Yeah.
Like, that kind of stuff is really cool, and it makes it more personal, and the characters seem more real, which also is tragic because you're playing a fucking horror game where any one of them could die. So
yeah, exactly. So,
there's a little give and take there.
Yeah, yeah. It feels so much better if you keep them alive. But yeah, it's traumatic as fuck if you kill them.
For sure. The team wanted the game to feel as real as possible, so they wanted to capture as much as they could from the actors. When casting for the game, this is one of my favorite parts, by the way, Supermassive had to audition over 200 actors. They really wanted the actors to be A-list from the start. They also shot every single scene for the game that was written in the script. There was talk about whether everything really had to go in or not. Could they just say something happened rather than show it happened? They decided that they probably needed everything to be shown to make the player understand that their choices had consequences.
Oh, yeah.
The ones who made the cut for the game are Hayden Panettiere as Samantha, Peter Stormare as Dr. Hill, Rami Malek as Joshua, Brett Dalton as Michael, Megan Martin as Jessica, Galadriel Steinman as Ashley. I'm guessing it's Galadriel.
Really, I have weird. No idea. I've never heard that name before. I know the big three.
Yeah. Noah Fleece as Christopher, Nicole Sakura as Emily, Jordan Fisher as Matthew. And by the way, I think Nicole Sakura had a different name when she did the game, but now her name is Nicole Sakura.
Oh, okay.
And Ella Lentini as Hannah and Beth.
Oh, okay.
In talking about the casting, Brett Dalton says, "You are actually using the space. All of that stuff. They were throwing things at you during the audition. I want to say just throwing ideas, but I feel like, and maybe I'm just misremembering this, but I think they did actually throw things. Maybe it was just ideas like, oh, there's a deer head now coming at you. They held auditions. They wanted real actors in this, not just voiceover actors. It was originally for PlayStation 3. It was completely different style of game. It's a decision-based game. There were some of that, but you were also using the controller as a flashlight and all that stuff. PlayStation liked it so much, they said, why don't you remake this now for the PS4? And it's funny that he says all this and you know it's not fucking true. You know that it was Will Biles who went to the Sony. You know, it's just, they did a whole big recasting thing. I think they wanted some bigger named actors at that time. I happened to be bigger known actor because of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It was the perfect time for that. They kept me on. I got to work with Rami Malek from Mr. Robot. I got to work with Hayden Panettiere. If you see the graphics in there, they're insane. I think they've done a really good job of making something with one foot in the campiness of teen horror, but the other foot into genuine creepiness.
Yes.
I think that it's hard to do in a video game. I feel like they kind of nailed this thing. I feel like the reviews out there are kind of supporting that. And it's not just me talking about how good this video game is I'm in. It's cool. The kind of feedback we're getting from legit critics. Tell me how that is, man. And that he's talking to some interview. I don't think he played the game.
Oh, okay.
Which is funny.
That's fair.
Music for the game was done by Jason Graves. Graves is famous for working on soundtracks for films in the mid-90s, as well as the soundtracks for many games, including Dead Space. When making the music for the games, Graves had set up 3 separate orchestral recording sessions over a year. These sessions resulted in 8 to 10 hours of single-use sounds, or as he calls them, puzzle pieces. They also had around 30 minutes of character themes. So in total, over 3 orchestra sessions, which each one would have to be 4 to 5 hours long.
Damn.
Which is crazy. Yeah, crazy, because normally you do like 1 to 2 hours. And yeah. he got like between 8.5 and 10.5 hours of material, and probably more that he didn't even remember.
That's crazy.
He also said when making the music for the game, it was non-traditional. In a normal game, you might have a single line of music for an area that plays while something is happening. A room where there are lots of toys might have a happy soundtrack while in the room. With this game, because of one choice in a room might lead to a chase down a hallway that would require a high-energy sound, and the other choice might be to hide underneath the bed, which would require a more pressure-building sound, this was the way for the most choices in the game. So like he said, basically it's non-traditional in the way that one room won't have one sound.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. That is fucking crazy. Like, I can't imagine how hard that is for a composer to come in and say, okay, so if they do this, you do that. If they do this, you do that. If they do this, you do that. And if they do this, you do that. And he's like, can you just like write it down? And Matt, why don't you score? So, how about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, even getting the script on this is pretty hard and challenging, but writing the music to match all these things is also very
fucking crazy, dude. I can't even imagine how hard that this, no wonder it was in development since 2008. They said 4 years, but I mean, they came out in 2015, so at least like
there's
6 years.
There's a reason pretty much only Supermassive Games is the only company doing these style of games now.
Yep. So Graves had to record, this was most interesting in the game, so Graves had to record many sounds that would fit each of the unique situations the characters could find themselves in. Every area had to have multiple sounds for multiple decisions. The game was in development for a total of around 4 years and ended up being released in August of 2015. Many critics praised the game and said it reminded them a lot of Heavy Rain. Biles had a couple things to say about the game in the end, firstly saying that his ideal playthrough would have at least a few people die. That the worst playthrough for him would be for everyone to survive, because that would be a dull horror. The best ones are the most gruesome for me.
Pretty much.
Will Biles also says, I'm not saying we have got it right. Biles clarifies, giving away his nervousness once more. Sorry, I'm reading from there. I try to take those things out because I'm just like, whatever. We just need a fucking quote. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Well, whatever nervousness he had. But if you get it right with storytelling, there's a ridiculously strong precedent in games. Everything you do is first person. I mean, not first person camera, but it's first person in the sense that you have agency, which how many fucking times have I said one of two things has to be strong, the story or the gameplay mechanics. And that he basically clarified it there. He said, well, I think the story needs to be really strong for a game to be good.
Yeah.
And that's it, guys.
I mean, it's fair. Yeah.
That's the story.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's get right into the best and the worst then.
All
right. Obviously, we are kind of just talking about it quite a bit. A great cast of actors. I love the actors for this so much. I think they nailed it. I think Rami Malek's performance, especially in this, is just kind of crazy. He plays that role so well. Yeah. And I'm not going to spoil anything with his character or anything, but man, what they do with him. And I really love Peter Stormare as the therapist in this. Like, that is just such an iconic character to see.
For sure. And I mean, the characters did such a good job of making them, like they said, either likable or just completely disposable, you know? Some characters, what's her name? The bitchy one who slept with one guy and then slept with the other guy.
Emily slept with Mike and then now she's after Matt.
Yeah.
Or
But they're dating. Yeah.
Matt and Emily are dating now.
Yes.
And then Mike's with Jessica now.
Yes. And her character in general, you fucking hate. Like, you hate her throughout the entire thing. You still try to save her because you're like, you probably don't deserve to be Wendigo food, but still.
She's such a bitch sometimes, though, in the game, and she just plays that bitchy role so well. And you know that bitchy role everyone talks about, and every horror movie has this role in it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another thing that this movie does extremely well. It's just, like, the horror homages and the horror tropes that are in every horror thing ever.
One thing I didn't like, and I kind of brushed on it there at the beginning, the story was so cool in the beginning. It was so fucking sweet. It was, like, super suspenseful. And then they had this whole Wendigo thing. It's like there's two stories happening simultaneously in the game. And one is what I think is the good story, and then the Wendigo story, which is okay, but not as good as the first story.
So I think the Wendigo story is really daunting the first time you play the game.
Yeah.
I think the Wendigo story on repeat playthroughs, and if you dive further into the lore and really explore the lore in the game, it gets more interesting, and there is a lot of really cool things and a lot of really cool explanations and reasons why all that's there.
Yeah.
And it does intertwine with the story a lot better than you think it does on your first playthrough.
Yeah. But at the same time, I feel like the true monster in this game was that first thing.
Oh, the psycho.
And honestly, that was more fun for me than the Wendigo was.
Oh, 100%. I fully think like they could have just only done that story. Yeah. And it would have been
better. I think they could have ended with that story and it would have been fucking crazy.
Here's the thing though, because they are doing so many horror homages, this is what a lot of horror movies do.
And you're right. And
they
some...
have some random ass twist that comes into the end. You're just like, oh wait, this was this movie the entire time?
Yeah. And
what
it would
the
have,
fuck?
It would have taken out some of the moments that were really interesting in the game, like the gunshot moment where he's holding the gun at was it Emily? I think it was Emily's face.
Yeah,
because she got bit because they thought zombies for some reason.
Yeah, pretty much.
But stuff like that, there's a couple. One of the things I didn't like, but of course I hate in every game that I fucking play with these, are QTEs. There's just so fucking many, and they're so quick, and they're so easy to fail.
I did see that for the remake, as well as with fixing the camera and doing more third person instead of fixed camera, they also did make it so you can pick whether you automatically succeed QTEs, you can pick so you automatically fail QTEs, or you can pick that you want to duel them like normal.
Okay, that's cool.
So you get a lot of different options, and especially for people who don't care about QTEs, it's really cool that you can just do auto accomplish. Yeah.
And if you're used to, what's nice about the new version too is it's on Steam, so if you're used to using an Xbox controller and you're like me and you use a PlayStation controller, you forget where the buttons are.
Yes.
Then you'll be good. You'll be golden.
Yes.
Another downer for this game for me, of course, is the camera angles. I don't like that second person perspective view. I don't like fixed camera shit. I just feel like sometimes when I'm trying to explore and find things, because this game does, it's one of the bright spots of this game is honestly how much fucking shit they have for exploring.
Yeah, and I know I'm gonna get a lot of shit for this, but like even like in the Resident Evil games, like the Resident Evil 2 and 4 remake, switching those camera angles and letting you do first person or third person and doing all these different things instead of the fixed camera angles.
Well, four
make those
four had a four, might four have had third been. Person. Yeah.
Okay.
Up after four was the first one where they were like, okay, we're fucking up with these fucking fixed camera bullshit.
Boy is, I like that a lot of like remakes and stuff are switching away from the fixed cameras because that does take away from a lot of gamers, and there's a lot of gamers who don't want to put up with that.
Yeah. So the fixed cameras are rough for me. I love the exploration in this game. That's one of the brightest spots is how cool some of the things you find are. Like, you'll find these little notes. You'll find, like,
the
stuff.
Totems.
The totems are cool. Like, they do a great job. And that leads to one of the downsides is they have hard walls. So what I mean by hard walls is they have points of no return. So and they're not very clear about which direction is the direction of the main story and which direction is an exploration direction.
I think this needs to be in the game, though. It needs to be this
way. It does. It does. It just makes it like a... I don't know. Like, I've always loved exploration so much, and you know, you play the Fable games, and there's a clear path you can take to the next story thing. But until you get there, you know exactly where you can go instead of going there. I also playing the style too. But in a horror game, I understand. Like, I totally get it. Horror games. Yeah. You can't do that.
Yeah. Well, and that's like kind of the thing is because like I know so many people who love exploration games, but that does take away from the game.
Yeah, it does.
It does. Because you're no longer in the game. You're no longer feared.
Yeah.
Like, most people, when they're exploring, aren't like, oh my god, I have to wait for something to attack. They
for
wait
sure.
till everything happens, and then they go explore.
Yeah.
So it just even messes with the pacing of it. So I kind of...
Yeah, and just, I will only say that this, to me, the only time this is acceptable is a horror game, because the last thing you want to do is take someone out of the picture to where they're like, oh, I can just skip all the jump scares now, you know?
Yeah, seriously.
It's like, it just doesn't work for horror games. It's a gripe for me, just because I love exploration, but I understand in a horror game where it matters. And plus, some of the exploration does lead to death, which is crazy too. So
yes, which is always fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I love the butterfly effect. And the
oh my god,
in
dude, it
game.
Was so fucking cool watching the butterfly just like build its fucking lines to make the butterfly wing. That was just so fucking sweet to me.
Oh, every part of that, and I mean that's even a horror homage to itself. That's a whole franchise of movies.
Yeah. I think that's about it for the good and the bad for me. Like I said, I love the plot. The plot's fucking awesome. Still, the cameras make it hard, but I mean, even that was doable. I didn't get too like upset or sick of it. There are moments where they kind of shift between fixed camera and third person. So,
yeah, and I'm really seeing that like that's the biggest difference in the new version of the game. There's like one or two extra endings.
Yeah.
There's different lighting effects, and then different character models a little bit, but then everything else is just either the switching of the camera angles and the being able to succeed QTEs and stuff on your own. So.
The camera angles is a big bonus for me. I would totally play it just for the camera angles, and plus playing it on the Xbox controller.
Yes, for sure.
Because seriously, guys, like the when I play this, it's so funny how many times I just fail shit because I'm like X. No, I just hit O. Fuck.
God damn it. Can we all get together, gaming companies, and put X in the same spot?
Yeah,
like,
go,
I know
go
they're
fuck
all different
yourselves.
Buttons, but let's just all
listen.
Or like,
PlayStation
only one
is
controller
the only
gets X.
No, PlayStation is the only fucking shitty fucking controller that where they decided I'm gonna be different from Nintendo and Xbox. Ooh. Well,
I mean, Nintendo, like, all three of them are different, though. That's the thing that's annoying.
But
it's
they
not
all,
like, two of them are the
remember,
same.
Remember, Nintendo and Xbox all have the same buttons. It's X, Y, B, A.
But not in the same positions, which is just annoying for Nintendo,
of,
even.
Kind of, I mean, the X is on the left side, the Y is on the upside, the B is
B is on the bottom.
That's the difference,
A.
is A and B in our Switch, which is annoying.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's almost the same, and at least, at the very least, it's the same fucking letters. Can Sony just switch their fucking shit to be the same as everyone? I get it.
Honestly, the only thing I mess up on the PlayStation is X.
Yeah.
And it's because I play Xbox so much. Because
you're like,
I hit X
it's on
the
left.
Xbox.
Yeah. I'd rather have the A, B, X, Y system. I think that's much better. And plus, Dreamcast did that. Sega did that with the Genesis. Like, everyone fucking did the A, B, and they had a C button, to be fair. But,
yeah.
You know, like, everyone's done the A, B. Come on, Sony. Get with it. Get with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, guys. We're going to make a petition after this episode to make Sony change the controller button names.
Let's
labels.
Do it.
All right, well, that was...
Just move the X.
I think that's about it for me with good and bad. What about you?
Yeah, so, first few hours of the game then, what do you think for the first few?
I think this captures you super well in the first. That fucking opening scene with the sisters and then the bus ride even coming back to the
Hannah
mansion after that. Like, honestly, that is such a cool fucking thing. The music that plays in that scene, the fucking the prank that went wrong, like, all of that was perfect.
Even the atmosphere of just all the teens like meeting up and like getting each person arriving to the party, because that's even a really good horror trope in a lot of these teen slasher movies.
Yeah,
is like everyone arriving one at a time, and you get a little backstory of each character individually beforehand.
The only
they
thing
meet
this,
up at the house.
The only thing this game needed in that horror trope was the black guy going, "No, hell no, I'm not going to die first." It's a stupid horror trope, but I'd love to have that in there. That'd be so much fun.
I always love that vine of, it's like, white people in a movie. Ah, where's Billy? We need to go find Billy. Let's go all call look for Billy. Black people in horror movies. Fuck Billy! Billy's dead!
It's so true. They write it that way on purpose. I'm not sure why, but it is kind of funny now. It's less like serious and just more fucking funny.
And I love movies like The Blackening that really make fun of all that horror trope, especially making a whole black cast that has to do with it. So all of the stereotypes are all in there, but it's also like they're making fun of it, and it's really meta. It's really awesome.
Yeah, but the first 2 hours, guys, seriously, this is as perfect as you can get in the first 2 hours to try track people in. Like, this is as good as it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's not, there's no hard QTEs in the first part of this. You get to learn how to shoot a gun in the first part. You get to kind of be introduced to the bad guy in the first part. Like, everything works out so fucking well.
Well, and you get, like, little homages to some of, like, the hidden lore and stuff, too. Because, like, you start realizing, like, if you mess with nature or something, there's bad consequences and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like this game did it well. This is 100% pass for us. Soul of a Gamer approved.
Yes. So on to Steve Achieves. So the game is about 8 to 10 hours long, and if you're looking to 100% it, it'll take you about 19 hours in total.
Yeah, probably multiple playthroughs in that 100% it, I'm guessing.
Yeah, because I think you have to get I think they have one of them actually titled like "This is the ending," and it's when all the characters die.
Oh, nice!
Because you even said that he hoped like that's the best storyline.
Yeah, yes.
And then there's a storyline for making them all survive. There's a storyline for making all the women survive. There's a storyline, like, there's achievements for multiple different types of endings.
He says achievements. Maybe now there are on Steam.
They're trophies.
Back in the day, it was trophies.
Yes, they are on
Steam.
We
just don't want to piss off our fucking Sony bitches.
Trophies, achievements, badges, whatever the fuck you want to call them. They're all the same thing.
Yeah, honestly, achievements are the easiest thing for us to go to because trophies is like the least desirable one. So,
yeah. So, I stuck with four of them that were actually kind of references to other horror movies. Mm-hmm. So, first one, The Exorcism of Emily. Obviously, an homage to The Exorcism of Emily Rose. And this is if you have Mike shoot Emily.
Okay. So, fuck Emily. I'm down.
Yeah. next one's called You Let the Wrong One In. Obviously for the movie of that
is
title.
That when you try to let Chris in and the Wendigo comes in instead
for having Ashley or Chris open up the trap door and lets the monster in. Yeah.
Oh, that's when they're down in the caves and you can take that extra. I see. I was thinking the part where Chris comes to the door and he's like, "Hey Sam, let me in."
Oh no.
You're like, "Yeah, fuck no, lock."
Next one is Scream 2, T-O-O.
I don't get it.
It's for having Mike cut off his fingers to free himself from the bear trap.
Did I do that? I don't think I did. I think I wanted my fingers, so I took the extra time to open the trap. I don't remember if that was good or bad.
Because you could, like, wedge... You could, if the machete was broken, you could wedge it between the trap and, like, open up the trap, I think.
Yes, because I broke the machete. Because you lose the machete, that's why it's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the last one, I think this one's a reference to the movie Ginger Snaps, and it's called Ashley Snaps, and it's for having Ashley snap and let Chris die.
Aww.
Yeah.
Aww.
But, those ones are, like, the ones that had the most movie references that I was able to pertain from that, and so I wanted to shout those ones out.
Nice. I like those achievements. Those are fun.
Yeah. So, all right, Hunt for the Eggs.
Let's hear it. I'm sure there's a shit ton.
There is a shit ton, so obviously I'm not going to say them all. We've already said a few. I said the ones that were in the achievements.
Yep.
We already said, like, the Butterfly Effect one and, like, the Teen Slasher, Cabin in the Woods, revenge kind of horror movies, supernatural horror movies. Obviously references to, like, Wendigos. So the game actually does have a companion app that provides a bonus, bonus features while playing the game, including... You'll get a call during the game from the psycho.
Okay.
So I thought that was a really cool thing. Not a lot of games have companion apps. Games that have had them have been pretty cool.
I mean, that would have been pretty fucking creepy for you to have the companion app open and your phone rings. Oh, my God.
Seriously,
that would have been awful. Yeah. I bet it asks, too, which kind of phone you have, because it probably tries to mirror what that would normally look like on that kind of phone.
Maybe,
it would have to, right?
Because I remember, like, the only other phone companion app I used in a game was for Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto has a companion app, and you can actually, like, use the phone. You can use your phone as the phone in the game.
Yeah.
And you can actually get calls from Lester and stuff from your phone.
Which
and
is cool.
That's the coolest shit.
It is cool.
Yeah.
Fable Anniversary also had a companion app, but it was kind of worthless. It was more for like...
Yeah, some of them are worthless, yeah, but some of them are kind of fun.
I think that one was more for people who... basically, if they never played the game, it's easy to find hidden stuff because they have an app that mm-hmm. shows you where the hidden stuff is. But for people who have played the game and done it like 20 times like I did at the time I played it, I was like, oh, I don't fucking need that because I already know where everything is.
Oh, that's fair. So I also... with all the lore of all the Native American mountain being sacred, if you are to harm any of the wildlife in this game, something bad will happen. Sometimes instantly, sometimes later in the game. But that is a big thing with a lot of Native American culture, and especially because this Native American tribe in the game, this is a sacred mountain to them, so everything happens there happens for a reason.
And just so you know, guys, we understand that there's a million different ways to describe Native people. You could say Native people, Native American, Native Indians, Indians in general. Indian, like, we get Indians. It. We understand. We're just going Native American. That is the easiest for us to comprehend. Maybe we're the dumb ones. We don't know each tribe's name. We're so sorry. But.
Yes. And apologies for, I guess, not saying the tribe name in this game.
Yeah.
But also, one other really cool homage in this is in the movie theater room in the game, there are a few posters from real movies produced by the voice actor of The Stranger,
mm-hmm.
Larry Fessenden. Or Fessenden. Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of the direct or the one of the writers.
Yeah,
I was gonna put him in as a member of the cast, and I was like, no, you know, he's just fucking around on there, so he's doing it for fun. Fair.
The movie posters are for Stakeland, The Innkeepers, House of the Devil, Bitter Feast, and Hypothermia.
It would have been so funny if Wendigo was up there because that was one of his movies.
That would have been hilarious.
Because he was the one.
But also might have been
too on the nose. Yeah.
Too much on the nose. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so that's it for all the Easter eggs. Obviously, there's more in there. There's a lot of homages. There's a lot of things that could be taken as homages to certain horror movies, so I'll leave those for you to explore and you to find out. But yeah, so I guess let's just go to our what it's worth.
You know what? This game, to me, is definitely a 4 out of 5. 4 souls for sure. I think, I would give it a 5 out of 5 if I thought it was perfect. It's not perfect. You know, I've already talked about the camera angles. That might be better in the remake, but I didn't play the remake. There were a couple things. Again, I had some problem with the Wendigo storyline, and that's just on me. But this game is pretty near perfect. Honestly, they did this game so fucking well, guys. You should definitely play it if you have a chance.
Of all the games in this genre, this is the best of them all. Mm-hmm. This is the best game that Supermassive Games have ever made. They've made lots of more after this. They've done some other big cast games like The Quarry, which did have some good reviews
Didn't they do that one, It Takes Two?
I can't remember if they did It Takes... I can't remember if It Takes Two was Supermassive.
I can't remember either. I'm pretty sure it was either someone from... Because I'm pretty sure there's an homage to The Quarry in there, isn't there?
No, there's an homage to, It Takes Two has an homage to their own previous game.
Like I thought it was
prison breaking game.
Oh, okay. I thought that was The Quarry for some reason.
No. The Quarry is it's, I don't want to give away what The Quarry
we're gonna
is,
play
but
that
it's another
one day.
Teen cabin slashing one, but that one's really cool. Cause it's got a movie theater
and I think
mode.
It's multiplayer. So it's like, you're all making the decisions together.
Yeah, so you can do a movie theater mode in that one, which I think maybe the remake of Until Dawn might have also added this, but you can sit on the couch with up to like 5 or 6 people, and you can each pick a character you want to control, and each person passes the controller when you're controlling that person, but
that's
you play it as a movie.
Yeah.
And it's so cool.
All right. So what'd you give it then?
Oh, obviously 4 as well.
Obviously.
Sorry. I did not say it, but 4 is also
5.
No, this isn't a perfect game for me. I also agree with the same gripes that you have. The QTEs can be annoying, and it sucks when you fail them.
Yep.
This game is amazingly replayable. It's so much fun. I've played through it 3 times myself. I've watched it played through another 3 times. Like, I can't get enough of this game, obviously, but it isn't perfect, and it isn't something that I recommend to everyone, but any horror fan, I highly recommend this to.
For sure. I agree with that statement. I think everyone should give it a try. Not everyone's going to love it.
I think so, too.
But I think a lot of people will.
Exactly.
All right, guys. Well, that was Until Dawn.
Yes.
We hope you enjoyed it.
Yes.
Sorry, so
join us next week.
Let me tell them I hope they enjoyed it.
Yeah, we hope you enjoyed it.
We hope you enjoyed it.
We hope.
Join us next week. We are playing Doom 2016.
Doom.
And I know it's not called Doom 2016, but it's... If we say
We're
Doom,
calling it that.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's two games named Doom. I was confused too. I'm like, which one is the 2016 version? There's like 15,000 Doom games.
Yes, and I own quite a bit of them too, so that didn't help.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. We will catch you next week with Doom 2016.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.